Hello, and welcome to Bnei Sharon's Beis Medrash program, Pirkei Avos series. This series is being sponsored by Elaine and Hillel Weinberger and family, in memory of Hillel's father, Akiva Yosef Ben Harav Hillel. If you would like additional copies of this CD, please contact the Bnei Sharon office. Perek.
All right, good morning. Welcome back from Pesach. So this morning we're going to discuss a Mishnah, the first parak of Avos, a famous Mishnah which sounds even poetic, but has to be understood, and the simple pshat is not really the pshat that the Mefarshim gave. So we'll look at Mishnah Yud Dalid in Parak Aleph. In the Sidurim, sometimes the order is different, and it's not still Yud Dalid. Okay. Hu Hoya Omer. This is the great Hillel HaZaken. So Hillel said, among his famous aphorisms, Im Ein Ani Li Mi Li. If I am not for myself, then Mi Li. Who is for me? Ukshani Latzmi Moani. And if I am for myself, then Moani, what am I? Vimlo Achshov Emosai. And if not now, when? So famous, it's been set to music a number of times. So what does it mean? It means an ili mili. So the simple pshat that you that one would hear usually in our day is that it's a reference to a certain type of altruism or selflessness that has to find the appropriate balance. It means an ili mili. If I'm not for myself, then go. Me, Lee, who's going to be for me? But Ukshani La'atzmi, if I am to myself, or as it's understood, only for myself, then Ma'ani, then what am I? Vim la'achshov emosai, and if not now, when? The problem is, of course, that twofold. None of the Rishonim that I could find understood the Mishnah like that. None, in that sense, a completely different context. And if that is the context, there's really no connection between the first two and the third. If we're speaking about selflessness, or the appropriate balance between seeking self-fulfillment and helping others, then what does Vim Lach Shaveh Masai mean? It's a completely different point. And usually when you have three Maimarim in one Mishnah, there is a conceptual linkage between them. As it is, the main problem, of course, is that nobody says such a pshat until modern times. But rather, the Rishonim looked at it in a completely different way, and even the later Rishonim and the early Acharonim, almost until very recently. It's not to say you don't find it today also, but the primary pshat is not that. So what is the pshat? Rashi says, Emein ani li mi li klomar, im lo akayim ani es hamitzvos, mi mekayim osam bishvili. If I don't fulfill the mitzvos, who's going to fulfill them for me? Im ein ani li, mi li. Nobody can observe mitzvos on behalf of someone else. No one can keep Shabbos for someone else, or keep kosher, put tefillin, daven, etc. Im ein ani li, mi li. Ukshani la'atzmi. And when I am for myself, meaning that I do motivate myself to do the mitzvos, ki af kishani holech va'osa, even when I do it, and I undertake the initiative on my own, and I observe the mitzvahs, even then, ma'ani, I am unable to do what my obligations are. I can never fully satisfy the obligations of the Torah. That's what Rashi says. The Rashbat has a similar idea, and I think what adds the... what adds substance to this understanding of the Mishnah in Avos is that there's a separate rendition of Avos, Avos Derab Nasan, which you find in the Gemaras also. And in Avos Derab Nasan, it actually says the Mishnah in that context. Imein anili velo zochifi la'atzmi, if I am not for myself, and I am not the zocha for myself, meaning I don't earn merit for myself, who is going to confer merit upon me that I will be able to exist in the world to come. No one else can. And the Rashbats, one of the Rishonim, Rav Shimon ben Tzemach Duran, who was one of the great Gedolim of Spain, who had to flee Spain after the pogroms in Toledo in 1391 and lived the balance of his life in Algeria, prolific writer of Jubas, says simply, "Emeinani zoche la'atzmi, mihu she'yizake b'shvili." If I do not bring merit upon myself, so no one can bring merit upon me. "Shekol odom tzar she'yizake la'atzmo v'lo yismach al zchus acherim." Everyone has to try to obtain their zchuyos in the world, and they can't rely on others to do it for them. But, afilu zachisi la'atzmi, even if I do thereby gain merit for myself, mahu aschus hazeh, what really is the merit that I've acquired, kefi mashini chayav lasos, in comparison to what I'm obligated to do. There's only so much that you can do, and we always have a lingering feeling that we've fallen short. So he brings a case, famous case of Mar Ukva. The Gemara says in Ksubos, Mar Ukva was an extremely affluent and generous individual who would give away money as soon as he had it. And the Gemara tells stories that he would, I mean, from our context, even the most generous ones, generous people can't identify with it anymore. Gemara tells a story that Mar Ukva would always bring people, give the poor money before Yom Tovim. So he sent his son to give an oni a certain amount of money, and the son dropped the money off and came back to his father, and he said, "You know, this man dines on the gold and silver vessels, and he's drinking a fine aged wine." All right? So what would we think? How are you? What would we think? You think he's wasting his money. Find an oni, a real poor person, not an imposter. So Mar Ukva said, "Oh, I didn't realize he had such expensive tastes. Go back and give him more money." That's a generous person. Anyway, on his deathbed, Mar Ukva asked his son to bring him his ledger, and he realized he had 700 gold coins left, and he said, "Zav ben kalila v'archa rechikta." He said, "I prepared so few provisions for such a long journey ahead," meaning into the next world, "that he retained so much." So therefore, he gave away the balance of what he had to the poor on his deathbed. So that's what the Rashbat says, and Rashi. No one else can be mezake us in mitzvos. It has to come from ourselves. And even so, we always have a suspicion that we can't fully achieve the true goals of the Torah, the life of righteousness and perfection, that if everything operated properly, we would be able to attain. But that's sheni latzmi mani. Of course, there are many applications to this. Chaim Volozhin has said it in terms of Talmud Torah. Clearly, in terms of Talmud Torah, study of Torah. No one else can study Torah for us. All right, every parent recognizes that when you're dealing with a child. No one else can study Torah. It has to be the goal of the child. And it's true of a community as well. Maral, by the way, says this explicitly. He says in his Perish on Avos, "Shem ein ha'adam mashal matzim v'torah v'mitzvos." If a person does not complete himself in Torah mitzvos, simili. So then, what am I? Who will do it for me? Shena Torah v'mitzvos sheyaso cherem to'elas u'shleimos elov. That the Torah mitzvos that other people do have no benefit to someone else and don't perfect someone else. Afim lamad aviv Torah. Even if the father has inherited Torah, it doesn't mean the son is going to, even if the father has learned Torah, it doesn't mean the son is going to inherit Torah from the father. Torah is not a Yerusha that's handed down from generation to generation. It's a Morasha, it's a heritage. Yerusha, in fact, there's another mission of us, Shena Yerusha Loch. It's not a Yerusha. It's simply that if a person has it, he's going to attain it. That can't be. And the Maral says, it's not like Osher, She'efshah she'adam echad yasaf mamon v'tenosa matana l'ish asher lo'om albo. It's not like money, but a person can accumulate a large sum of money and give it as a gift to someone who didn't work for it at all. That you could do. That's possible. In fact, there are things in life that are possible in that context. Money, heat, right? The same as mashal. You light a fire for yourself, so it'll heat other people as well. You play music for yourself, others might enjoy it too. In the material world, in the world of the Gashmi, it is possible to benefit others. And in fact, we can look at the member in that sense, I guess also, in the world of the Gashmi, then it's not good to be just mealy, chani lakshmi mani. In the world of the Gashmi, one is obligated to share. In the world of the Ruchni, a person can't be mazak anyone else because it's an individual process. It's true in terms of Torah, in terms of mitzvahs, in terms of midos. We know just because a parent has a certain character trait doesn't mean that, or a positive character trait doesn't mean the child will. And conversely, just because a person has a negative character trait, vice, doesn't mean the child will have it either. People acquire midos on their own. And it's not as if a person does a good deed or tries to foster a particularly good trait, virtuous trait, that others will necessarily acquire it. People acquire it only if they want to acquire it, and they want to undergo the same process that the one who acquired it already underwent. But it's not as if it could be transferred like a baseball card or a dollar bill or a dozen eggs. It's not that simple. It has to be worked at in order to be acquired. And of course it's true in terms of Shlemus. Shlemus is the pursuit of perfection that every Jew spends a lifetime trying to acquire. And we all know it's a constant struggle. It's not easy. There are many temptations, there are many challenges. We wrestle with our Yetzer Hara, which seeks instinctual gratification and pleasures of the ego, and all those things encroach on a person's pursuit of perfection. Question is, what idea underlies this, or what emotion underlies this idea's antithesis? Because it sounds very good, but we know life is not simple. And the shortcuts that people pursue in Torah are no different than the shortcuts people pursue in other areas of life. So what idea underlies the antithesis that, in fact, we can all benefit each other? That in President Kennedy's words, a rising tide lifts all boats, which may be true, arguably true, in economics or finance. If you benefit the top tier of the population, then everyone will benefit. Actually, it's a strange argument from a modern perspective coming from a Democratic president, but politics has shifted also in 40 years. That's what he said. That's why he was one of the first presidents to cut taxes dramatically, feeling that if you give the wealthy more money, they'll spend it, and everyone benefits. Industry, manufacturer, a rising tide lifts all boats. All right. So that's true in a material context, as the Maharal said. It's not necessarily true in a spiritual context. It's exactly the opposite. In terms of shleimus, it's not going to work. That 10 people could learn. I think it has an impact on a community, but if there's a community, a person doesn't learn, doesn't benefit, is not perfected by it, nothing changes. It seems obvious, though, right? It's not so obvious, because we don't live our lives that way. We seem to think that there is a way that we can indulge our vices and somehow accrue the benefits that others will bring to us. Why is that? So we have to understand the crux of the memra. And the Rambam, as always, defines it very precisely. The Rambam says, Omar, imlo eya ni ba'atzmi hame'orer nafshi lemalo. If I am not the one who's going to arouse my soul, then mi yoyirena, who is going to arouse me? She'ein li ma'orer michutz. There is no one who's going to arouse me from the outside. As he said in the second parak of the Shemona Prakam, no one else can wake us up. We have to wake us up ourselves. Apropos of that,
I was just reading recently. Someone was saying that when a child is from, say, birth to 5 years old, the child spends every morning waking up his parents. And then there's like a truce from 5 to 10. And then from 10 to 20, the parent spends every day waking up the child. Right. You only have the 5 years of truce where you each go your own way. But beyond that, from 10 to 20, it's very hard to wake them up. So it's a few more minutes. So that's what he says. If we're not going to wake ourselves up, then who's going to wake you up? Since it's my choice, it's within my power, to tilt my soul to either side, to the choice of the virtuous or the choice of the non-virtuous. Which deed will I do from the good deeds? Or, conversely, I won't do. Kilo hayu mechaser atzmo v'omer mo'ani. Which deed will I do? It's as if I'm depriving myself, saying, mo'ani komar, ma bami meni, v'eni sholetz. That's the first, emeinu nili mili, that who's going to wake me up if I don't motivate myself, so you know, I just go my own way. Ukshani la'atzmi mo'ani, as the Rambam says, that even if I do accomplish that, still, ma bami meni, v'eineni sholeh. What have I accomplished, really? I'm still not perfected, because the goal is so infinite, so distant. V'afal pisha sisi zeh inyan. And even if I did do what I was supposed to do, I never have that feeling of accomplishment. The question is, why is that? Why is that? So granted, what the Rambam is saying here, of course, is our bechira chavshus. That depends on our bechira. We have free choice. If we make good choices, good. But he didn't say that. He said if we make, we can only make good choices ourselves. No one can make bad choices for us unless we abdicate, but we make our choices. But then Hill said, Ukshani la'atzmi ma'ani. And if I have made those choices, what have I really done? What have I accomplished? I still haven't reached the level of perfection. Why should that be? Why should we lack perfection if we've made the good choices? What do I lack if I choose well? 1 second. Right? It's true, but not completely true. Well, there's no doubt. I think that the parameters of the choices, the parameters of the extremes of the choices are narrowed in a healthy environment, but the choice is never really limited. The greatest environment we ever had, the incubator of Jewish life, is the Midbar, all right? With the man falling every day and God speaking to Moshe every day, it didn't stop them from worshiping the Egel, or Dothan and Aviram, or Korach, or the Meraglim, or everything else. He had a lot of sins in the desert, despite that most virtuous environment that has ever existed. So ultimately it comes down to Bechira, but you are correct. It's a lot easier to make the choice. Sometimes it requires even a willful decision to absent oneself from the virtues of the community, but nonetheless you still have to make a choice. Make a choice. Yeah, sure. Well, you could buy all the equipment because all those people seem to be thin.
But once you make the decision, then I think you have to take yourself out of the obstinate state. Because once you make the decision to improve yourself, you're not going to be shelling until you find that rub or that environment to have the proper hashpah on you. Because it's very difficult to be better. It's much more difficult if you isolate yourself once you make the choice.
Yes, so why does Hill say that Shani lost me money? What have I really accomplished when I'm for myself? It should be the opposite, that once you make a good choice, you have accomplished something. You've triumphed over the Eitz Hara, even if in that limited context, and now you're ready for the next struggle. It's as if he's deprecating the very the successful choice that you made. That's what the Rambam says. Once I've done that, koma ma bomi meni vein any shalom. What have I really done? Mani, I'm not still not perfected. Ah, you're closer. No, he made a good choice. But he says he's still chaser. He's still chaser. They don't say that. You were late. None of the Rishonim say such a thing. They say it's talking about... No, we started early, like on time. So it's not your fault. We mentioned that, but arousing yourself to come on time. That's... It ain't on Ely Neely. Who's going to get me here on time? Yes. Yes. Look, it's true. Tamim Hayabadar Asab. All right. He's judged equivocally though. Right. That's true. That's really God's decision. As we can't, those are really the nistaros of Hashem Elokeinu. Those are the secrets of God, how he judges individuals, how much relative to the community, how much relative to his own talents, his own abilities. That we ourselves can't measure that in any context. Frankly, we have a hard time measuring ourselves in that respect. But vis-a-vis others, the point is well taken. I don't know if Hill is saying that though. Emein anili mili, chini latsmi mani. And as the Rambam understood it, and really Rashi as well, that if I don't do the mitzvahs, no one can do them for me. If I don't gain a schus, no one can give me one. Then if I have, what have I really accomplished? So how do we understand that? So Rabbi Chait explained this memra as the Rambam understood it. We'll get to a few other pshatim in a little while. But he explained it with reference to, I think, a prevalent notion in today's world. You see, people battle insecurities in a number of ways. One way, of course, is through superstition and omen and skulos. That's one way. People have a lot of fears in the world. And one way to overcome or attempt to overcome the fears that people have is to look to what other people do to make decisions, or look to omens to make decisions. A classic case, the simplest and most outrageous case, is the one the Gemara has, actually based on the Pasuk in the Sedra 2 weeks from now, that a person will say, the Gemara has a case of a black cat. A person will say, a black cat crossed my path, therefore I'm taking a different route today to work, or I won't go to work, or it'll be a good day. What that is essentially is abdicating responsibility for one's own decisions to an event. We have in our context as well, you find, it's very common today, people abdicate crucial decisions in life to other people, because then it's up to them to, they'll be the ones deciding, and you're really freed of responsibility for those actions. It's to marry this person, to go into this business, send a child to this school, whatever it is. It's not psak. You can't have a psak in a life decision. You can have a psak of something which is us or mutter. You can't have a psak what's better or worse. That's just the judgment of another individual. You can consult a wise person for guidance, but to assume that the decision will be based, will necessarily come out favorably because one has decided that, we're not that powerful. So there's a difference between asking for guidance and abdicating responsibility for one's own decisions. There's a big difference. Now, granted, there are cultural differences also in the Jewish world, but part of the cultural difference reflects this point. And that really is what the Rambam says. It's not two separate points. It may not neely neely. If I am not going to make decisions for myself, then neely, who will? And why don't people want to make decisions for themselves? because they say, Ukshani la'atzmi, if I would only decide for myself, mo'ani. The mo'ani is the complete depreciation of human potential, of the human's ability to use his own chachma and make proper decisions in life. That is essentially a state of avdus, and it's not essentially, but indirectly, it encroaches on one's avodas Hashem, as we'll discuss in a few moments. By the way, you find this as well. People will make a mistake, and let's say they're negligent in a certain context, and something unfortunate happens, and they'll say, it's a kapara. What's a kapara? It's not my fault, but just, something worse could have happened. And this took its place. The denial of the ability of the human being to seek denial of responsibility for one's own actions, and even subtle ways, pin it on someone else or something else, or in the broadest case, on the Ashgacha, right? It wasn't me who smashed my car into the pole. It's Kapara. Could have smashed your car into the pole, whatever. That is far-reaching and very extensive. And it comes essentially from, everyone is plagued by a little insecurity, some more than others, some less than others, but it comes from an incorrect evaluation of the mo'ani in life. No, it could be the driver's negligence also. It could be, for that matter, someone else's negligence, the other driver. A driver swerved into you, and you swerved. So it may have been a positive thing.
God's great plan or whatever it was.
But the fact that you weren't killed, you weren't badly injured. Is
right. That could be... right. Yeah, it is a fine line. But you recognize, though, that at a certain level, one is looking to escape responsibility for one's own actions by pinning it on something else. I'll tell you, just take the case in the Gemara. You see a black cat, and you say, oh, I'm not going to work today. Bad omen. There are people in the world who live their lives like that, right? Occasionally, there are world leaders who make decisions based on things like that. That's probably, no, sometimes usually the bubba. It's my bubby's fault. Right. You find that. I mentioned on Shabbos, I was just downstairs, I spoke, that Zacharias Moussaoui, was on trial now for involvement in the Arab terror of 9/11. Right, right. So I mentioned, I never saw a fellow wanted more to be executed, nor one that I wanted more to execute. So it was a confluence of interests here. But beyond that, the jury's out this morning. So the defense that his Jewish lawyers raised was exactly Dee's defense. His mother didn't like him. A girlfriend rejected him. An unhappy childhood. What's that? No, they didn't say that. He's not matzliach in his business. So therefore, he decided to kill as many Americans as he could. It sounds preposterous, right? Such defenses are used every day in courts. But, those are in the legal world, which is a world to itself. In our world, you have similar defenses as well. Any child who... imagine if your child came home and brought a 50 on the test and said to you, it should be a kapara. That was Rebbe's fault, that's right. Bad Rebbe, bad teacher, that's correct. Bad teacher, my friend was distracting me. If you just think of all the possible applications that you have, you realize how widespread, how extant avoidance of responsibility is in society. What Hill tells us, it may not neely neely, it all comes down to ourselves. The decision comes down to us. Ain adavar toli elo bi, in a different context. Whatever I do is really up to me. And that's how Bechir operates. God never restricts a person's Bechir. That's a great Rasha. But God never restricts a person's Bechira. So one should never say, I was forced into this. I had no choice but to sin, choose this embarrassing or harmful cause of action. No choice. You can't say such a thing. I hope so. Not always. Not always.
You see, Joy is saying, I'll add to that context as well. It's a fine line between appreciating the and gratefully accepting the will of Hashgacha and verging into arrogance that God is controlling every aspect of my life. All right, like. Right. Right. Yeah, well, it's true. Look, it used to be a bumper sticker. I haven't seen it in many years, though, but I remember in the 80s, there's a bumper sticker, God is my co-pilot. It's very encouraging, but I would steer clear of the driver in such a case, because Klee is not taking responsibility for his own conduct. Do you? What? Ah. Okay, well, no, one second. Wisdom gives you the tools, and that's a different thing. But it's a very good point that you're making. Ula Shmon Esrei is not a tefillah for God to make...
Mindy.
Mindy, okay. Mindy's the one who came early today, right? Yes. Ula Shmon Esrei really is a tefillah for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to create an environment whereby our choices will be rendered easier and will bring us closer to Him. That's what we're asking for. That the Hashgacha should will that we have the ability to get Das and the environment to get Das. In the case you mentioned, indirectly, the difference between someone, or you mentioned also, the difference between someone being raised in Teaneck and going to Yeshiva, and someone being raised in the jungle in Africa, where they don't have exposure to wisdom. That's also part of tefillah, that we should find ourselves in an environment of Torah, environment of tshuva, good health, prosperity, justice, world peace, Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, a diminution in the influence of the evil, and evildoers, Balaam Malshinim. What we're asking for is that the conditions of our environment be conducive to pursuit of Shleimus Adam. That's what we're asking for. So we're not asking God to make our decisions. Do you have a tefillah where we actually ask God that a decision we make should be find favor before Him? I guess.
Well,
I mean,
say in Rosh Chodesh.
Right.
When we ask in Rosh Chodesh, we say, Mishalach, our desires, our asking of Hashem should be Latova. Because we can't possibly see where the ending is going to be. So,
yes.
You know,
that's Mishalach Libeinu Latova, the things that we want.
Right. Things that we want. So sometimes I ask things now, and that's more careful the way I ask things. So sometimes you ask things.
Yes, that's right.
And you think you're making the right decision, and the Latova could be a different.
That's right. That's right. I remember Rabbi Chaya always used to say about, you know, people clamor for Bias HaMashiach. So what's the most unique feature of Bias HaMashiach? We won't, Yimas HaMashiach. We'll be able to learn Torah the whole day. Right? You learn Torah the whole day because there'll be prosperity and peace and universal brotherhood. All so people can pursue knowledge of God. Kamayim Al-Yam Mechassim. Right? How many people today are satisfied, happy learning 8-9 hours a day? If they knew that Yimas HaMashiach was learning 8-9 hours a day, maybe they won't want to sing for Mashiach now. Maybe Mashiach in 100 years after my time. But that's what it is. You have to be careful what you're asking for.
Well, there was even a story that not named the Rav, but a rabbi asked somebody and they talked him into going into the Chinuch teaching area.
Right.
And I said one time when I heard him speak, I said, oh, how wonderful, look who he got, because he was going to go into medicine.
Right.
And I know for a fact, because I spoke to the Rav.
Uh-huh.
And
please name names. It's not interesting if you don't.
And the woman next to me said to me, I don't agree with you, Mindy. Because she was a teacher, and she never had a more brilliant teacher, and she feels he could have found the cure for cancer if he went into medicine. So what about that, Harriet? Well, I never thought of it that way. Just look at the world we have gained from him. But what about that? You're that choice. But I never even thought of the other area where it could really have saved certain lives because she thought he was the most brilliant person.
Is that his mother saying this?
No. It was actually a teacher of
his. Teacher? Right. Teacher can be like a parent in that context. You know, right. A complete disregard of the true abilities and talents of the individual. That's the grandmother's role.
Like, so how do you answer something like that?
What's
like,
that?
You never thought of
Right. That's the role of the grandparent, you know, to see only the good in the child. Right. My grandmother, Allah Shalom, used to clip. You're my grandmother, Lillian. Right, you're both right. She used to clip every reference to me in a newspaper. So I once visited her apartment, and she had a clipping of an article called me a fascist. So I said, you know, you don't really have to have this on the refrigerator. She said, oh, they mention you. It's enough. They mention the article. Right. Only a grandmother would do that. My name was mentioned, so that's enough. Right. So it's true, but the decision, look, any decision you make is going to have consequences. All right. The main thing that Hill's impressing upon us is who's making the decision and who's taking responsibility for it. Look, I guess there are times when a person is confronted with a choice of two things and can't decide. And then you consult a rav, a parent, a trusted advisor, a good friend who has a good head to help you in the decision, but never to abdicate responsibility in the sense of saying, okay, I'll do what you say, all right, and it's on your head, because that's the avdus that the Torah has told us to avoid. It may not mealy-mealy requires acceptance of responsibility. That's one point. There's another point also. And that's Rabbeinu Yitzchak says, and Rabbeinu Yonah as well. What? Sometimes good, sometimes not good. Usually if your decisions are based on Chachma and no other considerations, then it'll turn out positively. But that's Yad Hashemayah too. Yes, like I always say from my Rebbe. That's a pasuk we say, Matzai Shabbos and Yitan Lecha. Vahi David Lechol Drachov Maskil, Hashem Imo. David was intelligent in all his ways. All right? And that's a good way to be. That's the way a person should choose, to be intelligent in all his ways. What does ultimate success depend on? Hashem Imo. If God is with him, we'll be successful. If he must, we'll be wrong also.
Well, that's part of an answer to make a choice that you ask about.
Right. That's right. Look, to bring up a very sensitive example, I was just talking to someone the other day. It was Achon Shal Pesach, and he was telling me that his father in Europe had asked Rav, "You should go to America, or not?" And Rav said, "No." He mentioned names that I won't. He said, "No, don't go. It's you won't be religious. Eretz Yisrael won't be religious there either." So he stayed in Europe, and he went to the camps, and his whole family was killed except for him, and he survived, and he came here. And there are others in the town who had not listened to the Rebbe and went to Eretz Yisroel. All right? And what's the common denominator? None of them were religious. They were all Mechali Shabbos. So was he right or wrong? That's why he dubbed the whole drach of Maskev Hashem Imo. Sometimes you make the right decision, and it can be wrong because it's Hashem not Imo. That's a possibility too. You don't know. It's not a perfect world. There's nothing that we could say, if we do X, it'll definitely happen this way. That life is not that perfect. And that's part of the Ukshani La'atzmi Ma'ani that plagues us, that as wise as we are and as much research as we do into a particular event or choice or circumstance, there's no absolute guarantee of success in life. That's what it is. There's no guarantee. No guarantee. Usually we'll operate within a realm, it's not completely speculative, is a realm which will say, most probably, this will happen as a result of this, all right? But, you know, we all know the circumstance. You could drive a car and going, well, the wheel falls off. It's also possible. Will it happen, you know, the next 100,000 miles? No. Could you have done something differently to avoid it? Probably not. That's also part of life. That reinforces the humility that people should have. My point is, though, that the humility that we are supposed to have should never encroach or subvert the requirement that we have to take responsibility for our own lives, because then we're not fully Avdei Hashem. Now, Rabbi Yitzchak says, he quotes it here, Rabbi Yitzchak Rishon, Rabbi Yitzchak says the same thing also, Imlo aorer ani sichli ve'eltosh machshavosai liknos amidos hatel zuvachayim uvatov. There's nobody could arouse us. The only motivator that we really have is ourselves, ultimately. I agree, parents help, teachers help, it's all true. But at the end of the day,
And this I always tell my children and really all the children of the shul when I speak to them. Only they can make decisions. Only they can decide. Your parents can tell you to put on tefillin. And you can even go through the motions and put it on. But only you don't know what's going on through your head. And only you, every person, child, but adult as well. Only every person, and no one else, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, knows what's going on in the person's heart. God is Bochen Klal Yisrael. So God knows what we're thinking about during the davening, and what our true intentions are in mitzvahs, what our kavanos are. God knows, and we know. And because we know, so that's what, that's how Rav Dessler interpreted the memory here. Really beautiful pshat. He said, Im ein ani li mi li, what's the ani of the person? The ani is the real person. Who we are. The problem in life is that the Yetzer Hara steals the ani. The Yetzer Hara steals the self and tells the self, you really want that and not this. Right? You really want to talk and socialize, that's a davening. But that's not the ani. The ani we know, Rav Dessler quotes the famous Rambam in Hilchos Gerushin, the real ani of the Jew wants to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We want to learn Torah. We want to do mitzvahs. We want to do the right thing. But we have influences from the outside that if we allow them to, will hinder our ability to make the right choices. So im ein ani li, mi li, he says, if the ani is not mine, if I can't capture that ani and keep it for myself, then me li, then I really have nothing else. But I want to add something else which is also important in our, two things which are important in our context. One is, of course, that imein ani li mi li chini lasmi ma ani, that people do feel that because they are who they are, that somehow God has to accommodate them, or the Torah has to accommodate them, or the tzibur, the kehilah, has to accommodate their particular needs. Or else. What's the or else? So the or else you'll hear today. Or else I'll go off the derech. Or else I will leave the community. But there is no or else. Because ein ani li mi li means that ultimately I'm responsible for myself. And to say either you accommodate this or I'm out, is a flight from responsibility. It's an abdication. It's not me. You'll be to blame if you turn me off. And Hillel utterly rejects such a notion that someone else is to blame. It can't be. There are very few contexts in life they have the right to say someone else is to blame. Hitler, Yamashima, absolutely. A Russian counters you and can even overwhelm your good bechira, your good virtues, and say, I will end your life. But that is a really limited context in the sphere in which we operate. We operate, and again, this goes back to the point we made earlier about the Musawi and the like. The notion that someone else is responsible for my criminal behavior is almost the core principle today of Western civilization. It's the society, not me. And Hill says, no, it's always you. It's a bad society, like Ariane said. He was in a society of Rishayim, Noach. He's perfect relative to a society. Good, bad, Darshan Lushrach, Darshan Lignai, very nice. The bottom line is, he separated himself from the society. This is the point, by the way, you find that the Sefer Taras Chaim, which is essentially a compendium of different ideas of the Rabbanei Brisk, and the Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva on Pirkei Avos. So apparently it was Reb Chaim who said that a person has to have the ability to choose the right way, af im yisheer bibdidut kol hashanim, even if he's alone. In fact, the Rambam says this in Hilchos Talmud Torah, I think, that if a person's in a society where he can't function, he has to go live in the midbar, wait it out until society improves, until the environment improves. Not many of us have the courage or the wherewithal to abandon the society and live as Bodhidim. That's not to say the society requires it in every generation. A Meshuggah can also want to be a loner and go off live as a hermit. But sometimes the society does demand that. Society is degenerate enough where a person says, I have to be a bodeg. I can't participate. And he says, that's the tzil we say in Shemon Esrei, at the end of Kedusha. L'dor v'dor nekil hecho, u'netach nitzachim kedusha samit v'shor mipinu lo yamush la'olam v'ed. What's la'olam? La'olam means in every circumstance. La'ol, forever. In every circumstance, I must find a way to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be mamlechim, even if the society does not approve. And that's very difficult. And because that's difficult, sometimes we lapse into the converse of that, which is a nice story that he tells about Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky, something we should learn also. There's a certain guy and asks for Yecheskel Abramsky, oh, Yecheskel Abramsky, you heard of him? No? All right, he was one of the great Rosh Yeshiva towards the end of his life in Yeshiva of Chevron in Yerushalayim. But he was born in Russia, he spent many years in Siberia, but in Siberia he wrote his Perish on the Tosefta called Chazon Yecheskel, wrote it from memory. He was in Siberia in the 20s. Then he went to London, and he was a dying there. Then he went there to Israel, I guess, in the 30s, where he lived the remainder of his life. He was once asked by someone, when you were in Lithuania, did you ever go with Reb Chaim Soloveitchik to watch him bake matzos? Because you just imagine, Reb Chaim had all these hidurim, and he was machbid, and who knows what the kavanos were. So Reb Yecheskel Abramsky said he never did, because he's not on Reb Chaim's level. So what good would it do him, Reb Yecheskel Hagon, Reb Yecheskel Abramsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, what good would it do him to see what Reb Chaim is doing? He's going to mimic Reb Chaim. Why would he mimic Reb Chaim? He's not on Reb Chaim's level. With this, he tells a story about the Mashgiach of Lakewood, died a few years ago, Nosson Meir of Achbogel, died just a very few years ago, who said that he and his colleagues, his youthful colleagues, 70 years ago, went to see the Chofetz Chaim one summer, on summer vacation. And they tracked the Chofetz Chaim down to a certain area, and they started talking to him. And the Chofetz Chaim said to them, one thing you should keep in mind your whole life, and I'll read to what he said in the Hebrew. Adam chayev lasos hakol levad ba'ofen atzmi. Person has to do everything in his own individual way. Sheyiyah avodas Hashem aprotis shalo levad mebli lachakos eskulam. That his avodas Hashem has to be personal to him without mimicking other people. And he writes, the Mashgiach in Lakewood would tell this again and again in Lakewood, say that people have a weakness. They do what others do. Noch machen. And he would say to them, you can't just noch machen, do what other people do, because others are doing it. The avoda gedola shalei lahargilas atzmenu ba, the greatest service with which we have to habituate ourselves, lo listakel al sheni, not to look at what another person is doing, all right? Not to look. Lo lischashev im Hashem. Don't reckon with another person. Rak alein. Levad. That's avodas Hashem atzmis pratis. That's an ein anili mili. It's a brilliant statement. Granted, you have to be on a very high level to not to succumb to this. And the problem is, of course, if you're on a very high level, then others will follow you. They'll just mimic you. So what have you gained? But the notion, which is so extant in our world, and you find this. Granted, it's inevitable in any organization. Shiva, shul, people start to dress the same way, and they look the same way, and have the same beards, and same haircut, and they shuckle the same way, and the inflection's the same, and the way they pronounce Hebrew becomes the same. It's all this, what's that? Different nigunim on the cell phone, that's true. You could learn, but not mimic. Not mimic. I give you examples, but not to get too personal. But what Yecheskel Abramsky is talking about, if a certain gadol has a certain hanhaga in our world today, people will right away say, oh, I'm going to do that as well. And there's such a thing as level jumping in Avodas Hashem also. Can't do something just because someone does it. This is a mitzvah, it's different. Halach is different. Chumrah, akula, anhaga tova. If you level jump too fast and you're not on that madrega, you'll destroy yourself. You become very bitter. And you see it happen in our society also, in our world. You start becoming angry at other people, don't adopt it, right? We have a new new pattern in Jewish life, I guess like 20, 30 years old, that a chumrah one day becomes the norm, mainstream, a few years later.
And then, even if halacha doesn't require it, if you're not part of that mainstream, you become, you're not from. You're out of the world. You're out of the element. You're different. You're almost fry. You're not from anymore. Depends what the, always depends what the chumra is. But certainly, just to mimic someone else is never good. To do something because someone else does it, whether it's a speech pattern, or a walking pattern, a shuckling pattern, intellectual pattern for that matter also. The Rav used to say, he would ask a question, and someone would say, you gave a shiur in this 2 years, you said such and such, and he would say, I don't need parrots. You don't need parrots. Enough parrots in the world. Think for yourself. A lot of parrots. Parrots, mimics, that's not a way in Avodas Hashem. It's interesting, you have Sarim, good Sarim, Maisa Rav, all the Hanhagos of the Groth, the Gaon Mivilna, for example. And it depends, not everyone should adopt them, necessarily, because they're not for everyone. Certain yeshivas you find that they do. Even different pronunciations of words, or they'll omit certain words, or add certain words. You have to be on Madrega. You can't just veer into shtick because it sounds good and it aligns you with a certain party or group with which you want to be aligned. That's not a way to say the Kadosh Baruch Hu. In a sense, what he's saying is that it can't be avoda atzmis. You can't serve yourself. You can't worship yourself. Where can you worship a group? It has to be avodas Hashem, but it has to be avodas Hashem pratis. Has to be unique to the individual. And people have different proclivities, and we're learning, but I don't think we've fully learned this lesson yet. Not everyone is cut out for a uniform mode of Avodas Hashem. Of course, we're only talking about within the realm of halacha. But people have different strengths. And if not every yeshiva can certainly cater to the different strengths or proclivities or personalities of the individuals, certainly parents should. That's really the role of the parents. To know a child's strengths and weaknesses and guide them appropriately. Hanach lenar al fi darko. You have to know the darko of the child. You can't fit the child into a straitjacket. But be that as it may, we're slowly learning that lesson. Right now, many yeshivas pride themselves on the philosophy of one size fits all. From a management perspective, an administrative perspective, I can respect that. I understand it's easy for everyone. But life is not so simple. And because of that, if people fall through the cracks, it means they need not TLC as much as sensitivity to personalities. But they're not always cut out for, the cookie cutter. But we learn that lesson very slowly. The ability, though, to foster an avodas Hashem atzmis pratis, and avodas Hashem, which is unique to the individual, all right? And when I say that, it could be in sublime and mundane areas. A person should have, for example, let's say there's a particular part of the davening that appeals to you. You say it to the greater Kavana a little slowly, whatever that part of the davening is, even if others are saying, the different pace. It could be a particular mitzvah. There are many gedolim who advise an individual. Find a mitzvah and make it unique to you. Sometimes the mitzvahs, I remember reading this in Jewish Observer years ago, a guy made Shiloh HaKein his mitzvah, his unique mitzvah. He was running around Eretz Yisrael, throwing mother birds out of trees. The Shita Rishonim, even if you don't want the chick, you send away the mother bird. But it makes more sense to say, if you want the chick, he was going up and down the country, throwing eggs out of trees, getting rid of... The point is, you have to find a mitzvah which is also... Not at the expense of other mitzvahs, of course, but find a mitzvah which is catered to your personality, and so, or sometimes which challenges your personality. And you have to fight through it and make that mitzvah your own. What's Lashon Hara or Tzedakah or Kavanah Tefillah, whatever it is. Make some mitzvah your mitzvah. There's a fellow at the OU who heads their Pesach food department. All right, they give seminars every year at Pesach time. Rabbi Singh, a very nice, erudite, very dedicated fellow, but his business is Pesach food. The whole year is special Pesach for him, because the production of Pesach food is a yearly event. It's not a 1 month event.
That's a focus. That's his focus in a business sense. You need a focus in a sense of Eretz Hashem also. Why? Because Emelach Shavei Masai. If not now, when? Which of course is the probably the element of the Mishnah with which we can most relate. And that is, procrastination is the thief of time. And the illusion that we all have is that our time is infinite and unlimited, and there'll be time for us to change and to plan, do what we want. But not only is that not true in real life, the Torah doesn't want us to live such a life. As Rashi says here, Misha Tarach B'Erev Shabbos, Yochal B'Shabbos. The person who prepares Erev Shabbos, you get to eat on Shabbos. You didn't cook Erev Shabbos, what happens? You go outside. You go to someone else's house. That's in our community. In the Gemara's context, you don't prepare, you buy takeout. If you're not Tarach B'Erev Shabbos, you have nothing to eat. The Memra, if he wanted to crystallize it into just a few words, it means seize the moment, spiritually, because it's all up to us, and it's up to no one else. We seize the moment every day, because every day is a new moment. And even if today's wasted, tomorrow's the moment. Or half the day's wasted, you have the rest of the day. Seize the moment, it's all up to us, Imlach Shavei Masai, and then we're the servants of Hashem, that he created, that he longs for us to be, and in whose service we find our greatest fulfillment in life. Okay. It absolves them from responsibility. It's very easy. It was never stressed to me. It was never stressed to me. A different background. Right. Well, you don't see it as much in the Lithuanian world. I mean, Rabbi Wein was never like that. Rabbi Chase never like that. You know, but it caters to a person's insecurity, a lack of confidence. It's up to someone else. That is the mentality of Eved, which the Torah speaks, right? You sell yourself into slavery, so the master says, you're going to come, you'll go, you'll marry, this, that. Someone else makes a decision for you. That's not a Ben Chorin. A Ben Chorin has to take responsibility. Right. It's a big problem. It's a big problem. My great-grandfather, by the way, added here, Shinasi Mohani, that once you have the Torah for yourself, then you have to go out to others also. Because that's my great-grandfather. He's very modern. It's in his say from Pirkei Avos. Seize the moment. All right. What about a prophet for today? Huh?
What?
My book.
His book. Oh, what's the rabbi's book?
Ad advertisements.